U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Senate impeachment trial gets underway with the Chief Justice swearing in the senators this week. House managers will make their case next week as Democrats cite new evidence in their impeachment investigation. And Donald Trump names his defense team, including some surprising names. We'll tell you about the competing strategies here going forward and what to expect as the trial gets underway in earnest. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, here with Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's talk about the start of the trial. A lot of formalities, very grave, walking over the impeachment articles from the House to the Senate. You would think it was Appomattox, or maybe the I mean, it was treated like with great solemnity. I guess that's the tone people want to put on it. But on what is essentially a very, very partisan exercise. Now, let's start with what you think, Kim, is going to happen here as we go into next week. Today, this week, we had the formalities. Next week, we're going to have things really get going.
Well, they still have to figure out some procedural rules, and there'll be some votes on that. We'll start again on Tuesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Monday is a holiday. And then we will proceed to opening statements, and then the House managers will go first, present their case for the evidence of why Donald Trump deserves to be impeached. And then there is some talk within the Republican caucus about whether or not you hold a vote right then and there to either convict or acquit and just be done with it.
So they're going to get 24 hours of Senate time over how many days, however many days that is. To make their case, the House managers. And then the Senate will sit back and essentially take stock, right? Mitch McConnell, I guess, will count votes. And they'll see if he can get 51 to go to a vote right then to acquit on both articles. If he can't, then they'll introduce give the president's team the chance to defend.
Yes, that would be exactly it. And clearly the White House is gearing up for that eventuality because, as you mentioned, they have put out the names of their legal team at this point, some names that are familiar to us, some that are not necessarily within the White House right now but have been brought in to help. The big unknown here, Paul, is where and when there could be a vote on witnesses, whether that comes after opening statements, whether it comes after the House has put forward its case. That's going to be another flashpoint here.
And that, if it followed the pattern of the Clinton impeachment, with Mitch McConnell has said he wants to do, you would have that vote on witnesses after the opening arguments have been made by both sides. Because that's the
correct
way it happened during the Clinton impeachment.
Yep. And what we are doing is waiting right now to see how willing Chuck Schumer and Democrats are to go down that road, because what has now been established very clearly by Republicans is if you demand that we have witnesses from that you want to call John Bolton et al., we will go down the path of reciprocity, meaning we will call, we'll allow the White House to have a say too in the witnesses that are called to defend the president. And not only are you talking there about Hunter and Joe Biden, et cetera, but a number of other names that could potentially really be embarrassing to the Democratic Party and Biden's candidacy.
I do want to get to the witness point in a bit, Bill, but I want to ask you about the president's choice of a defense team. Some surprising names. Alan Dershowitz, right. I never thought I'd see the day that Alan Dershowitz would be defending a Republican president in court. But he's one. Ken Starr, who was the, of course, drove the impeachment with his report on Bill Clinton.
Right.
And Robert Ray, who is a former prosecutor who I've interviewed on our TV show a number of times, very, very thoughtful guy, and knows the both the constitutional issues and the legal matters here very well.
Yes, I think the president picked a very good team. There's a lot of experience, as you mentioned, on these questions. So I think it's a very sober team. And they are kind of the interesting thing. Most of the charges we've heard against President Trump, right? We're familiar with the case against him. We're not really familiar with much of the defense beyond a few tweets that the president may have sent out.
Well, on the House Republicans, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit. But you will see a fuller, more thoughtful legal and constitutional defense. I mean, if we get to that. I mean, it's possible the Republicans could say we don't even need to get to that. I think they will.
Want to hear the defense.
They'll want to hear the defense. There's nothing won't hurt them any to hear the defense, and I think they will. It brings out, too, that though the senators are jurors, they're more than jurors because they can set the rules. They can overturn things and so forth. So they're a little more than just passive jurors listening to this case.
They can submit questions through the Chief Justice, Kim, of the managers and then any defense team. But they are not allowed to get up in their chairs, which they are required to sit in. They can't stand during the proceedings. They're required to sit down in the seats, and they can ask the questions through, I guess, a piece of paper being delivered to the Chief Justice. And you got to love the low-tech nature of this. But they can't stand up, and we won't have to hear from various blowhards, which is really a national relief.
I was just going to say, sign me up for the low-tech approach. This sounds to me like a much more civilized way. We should have all hearings conducted in this manner, in my mind. But no, you're right. So we'll see how much tolerance a couple of days into this senators have for this whole process. And if they're really that excited about also calling witnesses and delaying this and making it go on for another 2 or 3 weeks, because as you said, they must sit there. They cannot have their phones. They must be left in the cloakroom. They cannot bring any reading material that's not directly related to the proceedings at hand. They will not have their staff next to them. And this will go on for hours a day. We'll also see, look, I think if history is any guide, this ability to send questions and, you know, or call a point of order, which are other things that are rights reserved to the senators, they may do so with some enthusiasm in the beginning. But again, I think as this thing stretches on, you'll find people sitting quietly just hoping the clock goes a little faster.
There's another curious element of this and very different from the Clinton impeachment trial, which was really focused solely on the evidence that Ken Starr had collected in his long inquiry as a independent counsel, and then submitted to the House, and then the House explicit put on page specific articles of impeachment. Here, the House Democrats seem to be conducting a kind of rolling, continuing impeachment bill. They're now rolling out new evidence. Right. Adam Schiff of the Intelligence Committee said, "Oh, we've got a lot more evidence." Specifically, Lev Parnas, who is was an associate of Rudy Giuliani when he was out in Ukraine doing his thing, since been indicted on unrelated charges, and now is. In a way, throwing himself in the mercy of the impeachment manager, saying, you know, look, I've got data, information here. He's turned over some notes. They suggest, and he suggests, that the president knew more about Rudy Giuliani's goings on in Ukraine than the president has admitted. My own view is that's not a surprise. We knew that the president, I mean, it was his idea to send Rudy over there. I wouldn't be surprised if he was monitoring the thing every 2 or 3 hours with Rudy on the phone. But it doesn't really change the fundamental charge.
Right. Right. Look, this is the pattern with Donald Trump. They're always like, we're a step away from I gotcha, right? First, it was going to be a special prosecutor, then obstruction of justice. And then now they've moved to it's always some other piece of evidence. They could have interviewed a lot more people in the House case, right? They could have gone down these roads, but it's always something that's out there. And I mean, the other one is John Bolton. John Bolton's going to give us And it never seems to come up. This gentleman has a lot of issues on credibility to begin with. As you mentioned, he's indicted. I think he's out on bail.
Yes.
Remember, we went down this avenue with Michael Avenatti for a while on what he was going to do. So I think the thing now is to listen to what the case that they make and hear the rebuttal. And I think people are not going to change their minds in that. I think most Americans have reached the conclusion there isn't enough there to impeach a president.
All right. We're going to get to more on impeachment. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel, and we're talking about the impeachment trial, which will begin in earnest next week. And another story that broke this week that is getting some attention, particularly from those who want to convict Donald Trump, is the General Accountability Office. Kim issued an 8-page statement saying that the White House had broke the law and broke the Federal Impoundment Act in deferring for some time the military aid to Ukraine last summer. I've read that document, and I find it to be unpersuasive, ultimately, because I think the Office of Management and Budget had more discretion than the GAO gives it credit for. And in the end, the aid was released with time to spare before the end of the fiscal year on September 30. So it's an interesting opinion. It's one point of view. The OMB folks and the White House disagree with it. I think this strikes me as something similar to what happened in the Obama administration, fights between the executive and the Congress over spending decisions. Obama had these GAO issued opinions, but nobody wanted to impeach Obama over it.
Yeah, I think there's two different pieces of this, right? The substance and then the politics. On the substance, what you said is correct. This is a difference in legal opinions, and the GAO's opinion is not in any way more relevant than the White House's opinion. Remember, the GAO works for Congress. It does have a tendency to always support Congress's position. But it isn't the final word. And in fact, OMB sent a long letter at the end of last year to Congress explaining what it had done, its own reasons for why it had done it under what it calls its apportionment authority, which is the ability to freeze outlays of money. And by the way, it does it quite frequently for all kinds of different reasons. So OMB also has a valid argument that no law was broken. That then brings us to the politics, which was the highly suspicious fact that this was released on the day that, you know, senators were basically gearing up for an impeachment trial. And then, of course, the way the media ran all of the headlines. If you go back and you look at those GAO opinions from the Obama years, no one said Obama committed a crime. They pointed out that GAO's opinion was that this statute had been violated in this way, and we moved on. This instead is being used, no surprise, by Democrats as yet another silver bullet in their case, proof positive that Donald Trump is a lawbreaker.
Yeah, and it doesn't. Their articles of impeachment mention no statute that has been violated. None. In the actual articles. This will be a talking point. I don't think it's going to change any minds. Bill, let's talk about the witness issue, because as Kim suggested, there is a game of, you want witnesses? We'll give you witnesses, and we'll get Joe and Hunter Biden in turn for Mick Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, or former National Security Advisor John Bolton. My own expectation, and it's purely speculative, is that the Democrats in the end will back down from their request for witnesses if that is, in fact, the price they'll have to pay, which is having Hunter and Joe kind of interrogated over the Hunter Biden's business in Ukraine. What do you think?
100% absolutely with you on that, because if you look at it, I mean, one of the sort of fake things about this drama is we pretty much know the outcome, right? We may not know all the votes, maybe a few Republicans, but we know the outcome. So if you're a Democrat and Trump's not going to get replaced, why would you want to bring in witnesses? You know, we mostly know the case against Trump. They're going to argue the same points and maybe there'll be another government opinion. But we don't know all the stuff about Hunter Biden, his finances and so forth. So why would you want to bring that up over a couple of days? And there's a whole bunch of other witnesses. There's some people will ask for Joe Biden as well. Some people might ask for Adam Schiff because his staff met with the whistleblower beforehand. Some people might ask for the whistleblower. There's all sorts of things, and we don't know which way this could go. So I'm with you. I think it's a game of chicken, and it's doing what it did in the House. The Democrats' behavior, just showing themselves not serious about any of this, is uniting Republicans in a way that Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan really could never unite Republicans before. Some of them may not like Donald Trump. They may actually be inclined to hear witnesses. But when they look at the sort of high-handed Democratic behavior and the way they've sort of cheapened impeachment, I think it becomes harder for them to stray.
What I expect to happen, Kim, I've been wrong before, sometimes frequently.
Not often, Paul. Not often.
But what'll happen is, so they'll demand the witnesses. The Republicans will say, okay, let's. Here's the price of the witnesses. There'll be a vote of some kind. There will be or they might decide not to have a vote at all on witnesses. So they'll probably not be called. And then the Democratic talking point will be, aha, see, they covered up. It was a cover up. And they'll take that argument all the way to November, playing up whether this fact or that fact drivels out. And at this stage, knowing, as Bill suggests, what the outcome will be for the acquittal of the president, the game is all geared to November's election. And in particular, Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, and Nancy Pelosi, who's in the sidecar now to assist him, their goal is to try to make life very difficult for a half dozen Republican senators who are running for re-election and hoping they can make difficult votes that hurt their chances.
Well, that's an excellent point, which is we frequently point out that this is a partisan impeachment venture. Well, what does that mean? It means that, you know, one party's doing it for political benefit. And that doesn't just stop at the door of the presidential race. So, yes, now that this is moving on into the Senate, Chuck Schumer's goal is to force a number of votes that'll make things difficult for Republicans who are up for re-election, try to get the media to pressure them as well to go along with the threat of cover-up hanging out over them. However, I would just point out that I think Democrats are beginning to get increasingly nervous about this witness strategy, especially as Republicans have spoken more about what they'd like to do with witnesses if it were to come to that. And remember, it is highly likely that part of Donald Trump's defense is going to be that he brought up this whole question of Biden's business dealings in the Ukraine as part of a larger concern about corruption. And so it would be reasonable to then call all kinds of witnesses that could talk about Hunter Biden's contract there with the Burisma board and what Joe Biden knew about it. So it's not just a question of calling the Bidens. You know, maybe they call the former White House energy czar, a guy named Amos Hochstein, who it's been reported raised this issue with Joe Biden, and have him talk about what Joe Biden's response was and what his own concerns was. I mean, there's a lot of witnesses could be brought in. We know knew about this at the time, that it could be highly damaging for the Democrats' top prospect for their presidential campaign.
The other element, the fascinating political impact or potential impact here is on the Democratic candidates for president. We're now 18 days away, 17, I guess, from the February 3rd Iowa caucuses, and you have four senators, Amy Klobuchar, Michael Bennett, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders, all stuck in their chairs in Washington for the duration of the impeachment fight trial. I guess they can hire a car and a plane from National, fly out to Des Moines on a private plane after the proceedings each day, and then fly back after an event or so. They could do that. They could also have interviews lined up from sundown to sun up if they want. But there's no question that they're giving up some time on the ground in Iowa to Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah, Paul, I think you could consider it an in-kind contribution to the Buttigieg and Biden campaigns.
By whom? By the House?
By
House Democrats?
By the House Democrats, right, doing this. This is originally, I think, it was one of the reasons they wanted this done by Christmas. So it's definitely going to hurt. I think it hurts if you have – who's the person likely to come out of this the most hurt? I mean, conceivably Joe Biden if they call these witnesses. But Amy Klobuchar, I think she's in the race – at the tail end, Iowa's a big make or break for her.
She's got to win. She's got to do well.
She's from the Midwest, and that's the place. And so she has to sit in Washington. I think she's the one. The other ones are hurt as well, but I think she's hurt. And Iowa's particularly important for these things because as a caucus, it really is about pressing the flesh and so forth for people. I think the physical presence is a little more important to prevailing there.
Kim, put on your Machiavelli hat. Could Nancy Pelosi really be doing this in part to help Biden and Mayor Buttigieg, thinking that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and their Medicare for All proposal is a killer for her majority?
You know, I'm about as cynical as they come, Paul, but I don't know if this was as much intentional as it was just a mess, in that if you go all the way back to the fall, and Nancy Pelosi first laid out her kind of timeline and hopes for this. I think Democrats wanted to get it done much sooner. I think they wanted, well, it was clear they did. And they were hopeful that this entire thing, including the trial, would be finished before everyone went home for the Christmas break.
But Kim, the contradiction, I mean, I agree with all of that. But then why'd she sit on the articles of impeachment? She could have dropped them right before Christmas, delivered them over. And then when the Senate came back, they would have been over in the first 2 weeks.
Maybe, or it could have gone on longer. Look, I think, again, that was a miscalculation. Maybe she is. I mean, there is clearly a growing fear among the Democratic elite and all the poobahs in the party that there is a big risk to having a Bernie Sanders as a nominee, even to having an Elizabeth Warren as a nominee. And I don't think that they give the other senators who are running much of a chance, including Amy Klobuchar. So if this is your opportunity to bring them all back, make them sit down and essentially handicap both Warren and Sanders, the two progressives, and hand it to the guy who is, you know, mostly the standard bearer for the party, then all the better.
Yeah, I doubt it's actually that as calculating as I posited. But nonetheless, that's the effect will be to make life more difficult for those Democrats. And as long as Biden doesn't get called as a witness, or Hunter doesn't get called as a witness, this could redound to his benefit. And he is, of course, among four people who are very close. Warren, Sanders, Mayor Pete, and Biden are all very close together.
Right. And a lot of undecideds.
And a lot of undecideds in a state where the voters, the caucus goers, typically decide in the last week or right. So. I mean, a big chunk of them do. And I'm not talking about 5%. I'm talking about 30 to 40% who decide in the last couple of weeks. So these are very important days in Iowa, and Biden and Pete will be there and the others won't.
And I think, again, it leads to the larger question, why do this at all when you have an election coming up? Shouldn't the resources be put into defeating Donald Trump at the ballot box if they're confident? It seems to me they're not confident, and I think they're also not confident in the House case. So what are they trying to do? I don't think the Democrats are even necessarily sure they're going to get witnesses or so forth. I think what you laid out is more likely that they realize we have this bad case. It's not going to go anywhere. He's going to be acquitted. What's the best we can do? Instead of blaming the bad case for the outcome and the slipshod way, dubiously constitutional way that they went about this, blame the Republicans for covering up. It's always, you know, one other thing that Donald Trump got away with murder because Republicans betrayed their oaths to the Constitution. I'm not sure it's going to sell, but that I think that may be their best argument given the circumstances.
And from the Donald Trump point of view, Kim, just to finish up, he As is his habit, he has said various things and different things over the course of the weeks of the impeachment drama. He has said, the Senate ought to dismiss the charges right off. There aren't the votes for that. He said, well, I want to hear a full defense with a lot of witnesses. Then he says, well, I want the whatever the Senate wants, which seems to be where he is now, which is probably the smart strategy, which means it's in the hands of Mitch McConnell and his ability to get 51 votes on a particular question.
Right. And Donald Trump should rightly trust the instincts of Mitch McConnell to do what is both right for the institution, but also to handle appropriately an impeachment proceeding that, let's be honest, up to now has been generally a farce. And the president has been all over the place on this. I remain convinced that the best way that they do this is, I think it's silly, this argument now, to just have a motion to dismiss. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. It's likely that the White House would have lost that vote by big numbers, which would have been a headline and been an embarrassing way to have started a proceeding, because there's enough Republicans and every Democrat that would feel it was their obligation to hold some form of trial. But go ahead, have your opening statements. Don't go down the roads of witnesses. Allow the House managers to present their case in full and then hold an immediate vote. Give this proceeding attention, but generally kind of treat it with a little bit of the skepticism it deserves. Have a vote and allow the president to say, look, I was acquitted in the Senate.
Good advice, Kim. Good. And then I think a likely outcome. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week to cover the impeachment trial.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.